And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins me for another Doddcast edition of the show. We are going to be going national, talking National Signing Day. Of course, we will have some National Signing Day takeaways from the SEC. But first, we'll be discussing Texas, where Dennis Dodd spent National Signing Day in Austin with Tom Herman. We will also be discussing the news of the day, which is the latest in the release of Baylor documents and what it means for Art Briles. Make sure that you're subscribed on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher so that you can get podcasts first and enjoy the Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, we are going a little bit national this week. We are going to the Lone Star State. Lots of different stories. Dennis Dodd, the Doddcast. Dennis, you were embedded with the Texas Longhorns, correct, for National Signing Day?
I was, yes.
All right, we will get to that in a little bit. Let's first get started with the news of the day. On Thursday evening, court filings filed by Baylor University and some of its regents in response to a libel lawsuit from a former football staffer. These are court filings that have been released to the public through the Dallas Morning News and many other news outlets. The full story you can find on CBSSports.com. Dennis, what we have right now is what so many people called for, essentially the meat of the Pepper Hamilton report that was released back in May of 2016, the actual evidence that showed what so many people believed, which is that Art Briles coordinated and helped and was aware, all things that Art Briles has denied, with some of the student-athlete misconduct at Baylor. Have you gotten a chance to read through some of these allegations or some of this evidence, and what are some of your initial reactions?
Yeah, this is the heart of the matter. I've said, I don't think this is too far a stretch. When everybody screamed for the details and the written report of Pepper Hamilton, this is what they had when they fired Art Briles in whatever it was, late May, that at least this was discussed, if not passed around to those regents, what Art Briles had done in these emails. You know, blocked alleged victims, passed over potential wrongdoing. You know, is she a stripper in terms of one masseuse who complained about a player as if to discredit her character? And what I call this is a legal trump card. Everybody wanted to see the written report. Well, we're seeing part of it now. This is why Art Briles was fired. This is why none of the assistants were named, because it's a legal strategy that someone over there thought up to keep everything private. And they still control the narrative, if you think about it. Art Briles dropped his lawsuit on Wednesday. Dropped his libel lawsuit, obviously knowing this was coming. The assistants were not named because Baylor does not want any lawsuits, which would then lead to discovery, which would then lead to depositions, which would then lead to their people being on the stand, being deposed in public record.
Right.
They still control the narrative here. They've disparaged Art Briles to the point that he drops his lawsuit. There'll only be so much that they can obfuscate. But in this case, we are seeing the heart of what that Pepper Hamilton report found, whether it was written down or not.
There was, from what I saw, you know, I don't mean to oversimplify at the risk of minimizing the impact, mm-hmm. but we checked all the boxes. There was alleged assault where there was communication between Art Briles and a football staffer that included making sure the Waco PD was going to help keep it quiet, and that message being relayed all the way to former athletic director Ian McCaw, with Ian McCaw text message quoted in this report, a sitting athletic director at a Power 5 university saying, "That'd be great if this stays quiet," with an exclamation point. So you have the physical violence, you have sexual assault, you have allegations of gang rape, you've got mishandling, but at least certainly not holding yourself to a strict code regarding your drug policy. I mean, it was basically all of the different areas of team rules. Like, you know, when we get the press release that says someone's been suspended for an undisclosed violation of team rules, it was like we checked all the boxes here, and they found evidence, and it was between 2011 and 2015, a bunch of different instances, but it was like, there's no way that Art Briles can talk his way out of this, because it's every bit of major college football misconduct right there on record with him being both aware and complicit.
Yeah, and, you know, all credit to Baylor. Now, obviously, there were some Art sycophants within those regions, but I think that's being cleaned up, whatever cleaned up means at Baylor right now. Because there were 35 regents at Baylor, and there was division there. We know that now, but they did the right thing, and we move on. I the upshot of that is signing day, and it's really hard to talk about this stuff. It sounds like Penn State, because it's really hard to deviate and then start talking about signing day when there's obviously been these horrific crimes, Chip. And, you know, one of the great stories of signing day, sorry, but Matt Rhule going from one commit on December 27th to a top, 40 class?
Yep.
24, 25 guys on signing day. Now, what quality were they? You know, we don't know. Oh, I do know this. They went from 64 scholarship athletes. Now they're full. They have 85, for better or worse. So I think the story there is less about the signing class and more about what some of us have written about why Matt Rhule took the job at all. He's fully invested.
As we go forward with Matt Rhule, where do you think the confidence is from Baylor in him, and what is a realistic expectation? I mean, this is obviously a good first couple months, like you mentioned, and in that hall that is going to bring them close to 85 scholarship limits. I mean, they got a couple of 4-stars on National Signing Day. They got a couple of guys they were really targeting and pushing hard for. And if you win a couple of those battles, you know, and we'll use this as a little bit of a bridge, you know, on National Signing Day, Texas wasn't winning all the battles that they were in there fighting. So what's, you know, what is – first, what is the expectation for Baylor and Matt Rhule, maybe here in these first 2 years? Because it's an interesting spot where I think, like Penn State, like you mentioned, I think that the story and the fallout and the details and the depositions, I think that's going to continue. All the while, Matt Rhule is going to be trying to guide this program out of the woods.
Yeah, they're all in. Both sides are all in that respect. I had a couple of people ask me again, while I was in Texas, why did Matt Rhule take that job? And I think you can only take him at his word when, and I wrote about this, when he said it was a calling at his press conference. You know, when you add the fact that he turned down Oregon, an offer from Oregon, I don't care if Oregon was 4-8 last year, in any metric, in any measuring stick, Oregon's a better program than Baylor right now and probably overall in the best of times. So he turned down Oregon to go to Baylor. Even with a 7-year contract, again, both sides eyes wide open, he gets a 7-year contract. This has the potential as much to ruin his career as to make it.
Yeah.
You know, he could come out of this, you know, Baylor bad, crippled, horrible, bad old Baylor, and where's Matt Rhule then? But so I think, I don't know if the word is spiritually, he's all in. He is Christian. His family, his dad is a Nazarene minister. So there is some part of that I can rebuild this, not only the program, but the reputation of the school, really the football program and the school. It's a school that needs rebuilding right now. The players that are there now are basically innocents. They're going to suffer the consequences, a lot of this stuff. So no, and just personally, he is that character person. He is a good guy. He is a good coach. And I don't think you have to look any further than Temple to know that he can coach. I mean, look, it's freaking Temple. And he called a shot 4 years ago at the incoming freshman when he said, if you guys stay, you're going to win a conference championship. And by golly, they did.
I think that Rhule will have a chance for this. I don't know if Baylor's going to, you know, get back to – you know, I don't know if they're going to get back to winning a Big 12 championship, but here's why I think Baylor is going to succeed under Matt Rhule. A lot of it is because of what you just said. But another thing is that while Baylor certainly saw a lot of the dark sides of big-time college football success, the other thing that university learned is how much money you need to and can spend for big time football success. And so I think that, you know, if Matt Rhule can come here and pitch to school and say, keep giving us all these resources and we're not going to have the other stuff, then Baylor has an opportunity based on how unique the school is and based on Matt Rhule's personality to not crumble to the bottom, you know, to the dregs of the of the Big 12. They can at least remain competitive and take on that role of every couple years when the right classes come together, now we sneak up, but at least you're competitive every single year, you know, competing for bowl games and trying to knock off the big dogs.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be a national program like they were for a little bit under Art Briles, but I do think they'll be competitive. They have the same problem everybody else has in Texas, is the best players are leaving Texas. That was one of the main themes of Wednesday when Ohio State got three of the top six in Texas. But I had something just struck me. I just want to throw it out there. Given what's happening right now and the climate we live in, why isn't Houston a better option for the Big 12 than Baylor right now? I don't think it can happen because those media contracts include Baylor. But if I'm ESPN and Fox, I'm sitting there going, yeah, you know what? Yeah, because even though you're showing Baylor and, you know, you've bought into that 10-team league with Baylor in it, you're going to have to mention this stuff every time you show one of their games.
Oh, yeah.
So, what, you know, given what Houston's done and we learned all about it in expansion, why isn't Houston a better option right now?
It might be, but that ship has sailed. I just
I'm just saying if they wanted to penalize Baylor,
right?
You know, and they are going to, what, you know, the Big 12 is going to do something. They are incensed that this has happened. They're not going to kick them out, but I do think they're going to withhold revenue. I think that's a meaningful penalty when you're getting what, $30 million a year.
Before we go any further, we've got to talk about what's going on at Blue Apron. Now, as you know, you can get Blue Apron. It is so affordable for less than $10 per person per meal. And right now, if you go to blueapron.com/SEC, you can get the latest. You can see the current menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping. This is going to be an incredible opportunity. I always love it because you get an opportunity to push yourself outside of your comfort zone. And again, this is blueapron.com/SEC. You'll get to check out the cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple walnut and farro salad. Maybe you want to look at some udon noodle soup with miso and soft boiled eggs, and you can get all of this. Again, three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SEC. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, well, that does bring us to the state of Texas. It does bring us to where you have been, where you spent your National Signing Day, and you mentioned it right there. There's a piece from you on CBS Sports. It's not quite up while we're recording, but I'm sure that by the time this podcast is up, it'll be there. Mm-hmm. So be sure to check it out for some of your takeaways. But you set the stage right there. The top recruits from the state of Texas were going to Florida State in the terms of Marvin Wilson, the top-rated uncommitted recruit on National Signing Day. They went to Ohio State. They went to Stanford. They went to LSU. They went everywhere. Not only not going to Texas, but not even going to the Big 12. So before we get into the Longhorns and Tom Herman specifically, you know, do you think that there's a real concern within the Big 12 as a conference that, you know, the state of Texas, which is, you're right there with your Florida, your California, and Texas, like, is there a real concern at the current state of college football recruiting in the Lone Star State?
Absolutely. I think it's critical. If you believe that the Big 12 will someday break up, this will be a main reason, because there's no center now. I remember when the conference formed in 96 that Donnie Duncan and of Oklahoma's AD and DeLoss Dodds from Texas AD went to New York and actually talked to sponsors about, hey, how would this look if we did this? And they literally said it's worth it to have those teams together, because we can sell a lot of Chevy trucks from Iowa to Texas. To sum it up.
Right.
And that's why it was a go, a big reason it was a go for them. You know, if you've got no dominant team, if you've got this malaise, if even Texas, as good a brand as it is not competing for championships, and it's not, then, you know, I think you've got a problem. Because one thing the Big 12 could always count on is because even Iowa State, because it was in the Big 12, could tell recruits down there, hey, come here and you can, your mamas and daddies can see you play on TV. Well, you know, even that's not happening now, to the point that for the first time, I guess, maybe ever, because these rankings have only been around for about 15 years, Texas did not get a top 10 player from Texas. In the Rivals site, I think it's, they didn't get a top 13 for the first time. It was Texas' worst recruiting class, worst, quote unquote, ever, the 26th and 24/7. And look, 26th isn't horrible. It's all in the eye of the beholder. You know, they're not 75th, but they're 26th. The dichotomy of that is last year, Tom Herman's Houston class was 35th, best ever by a Group of Five school. This year, he's 26th. The Texas and the sky is falling.
Right.
So, I mean, really an indication of he's taken a step up in competition. But that's what all the questions were about.
But
on signing day at his press conference, you know, why?
And also, you know, just in terms of the Big 12 as a whole, that Texas class, number 26 in the country, but still number 2 in the Big 12, mm-hmm. you know, because you're dealing yeah. with national rankings in the Big 12 that are for the most part, down there in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, and by a long shot, number 2, I'm told. Oklahoma really killed it. I think Bob Stoops said it was one of his 2 or 3 best recruiting classes that he's had at Oklahoma. Now, look, signing day is all full of hyperbole, but I'm told that that's a distant number 2. But a good point, again, that goes along with my point that, boy, 26, and I was kind of caught like off guard, like 26, really terrible? And then I looked it up, and it the lowest they've had since – the ranking started was 16th. And I think that was in Charlie Strong's transition year, maybe Mac Brown's last year. I don't know.
Well, also,
but that's the worst they've ever been.
Yeah. And, you know, and back into the Tom Herman in Texas specifically, that is not competing for championships because the evidence has shown us over the last 15 years, as long as we've had our current championship era and as long as we've had these recruiting rankings, you've got to string together like 3 in the top 10 in a 4-year window, and maybe that fourth one can't be lower than 15 or 19 or 20. You know, you need to have for a 4-year window an average recruiting class ranking of about, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10. And then obviously in the Alabama example, 7-time number 1 class in the country, it's a little bit closer to 1. So the Texas Longhorns are how far from competing for championships again, in your opinion?
Well, real quick, in terms of, you just brought up something. The Clemson seniors that won a national championship, their class was ranked 15th as freshmen. That's the lowest since Alabama was number 15. The Alabama seniors were number 15 in 2009, and then they went on that run both in national championships and recruiting, probably tied at the hip at the same way. There have only been 30 schools since 2000 that have even finished in the top 10. That encapsulates every national champion since then, or every national championship program. So the takeaway, I say this every year, if you fit, the only certainty about recruiting is if you're in the top 10, you're going to compete for a championship. Anything below that, it gets a little dicey. What does Texas have to do? Tom Herman is this. He kept calling it a transition year. It was almost off-putting to people that are fans. It's like, okay, what does that mean? Well, there's a piece in the story that says he did his research in transition years when coaches leave and are replaced. Those next classes are most likely to have the most upheaval, the most transfers, the most problems off the field. And he quickly amended that to say, but, you know, we're doing everything we can not to have that happen here. They missed on some guys. They missed on some really good guys. They got a quarterback, Sam Ellinger, from Austin Westlake, who immediately is going to be a battle at quarterback with Shane Buechel. I will tell you this, the gist of the story is that minutes after the last fax was in, every coach in that office was on the phone calling 18 recruits. This is going to be you, big dog, next year on the stage in burnt orange. So I have no question, based on Tom Herman's track record, that they're recruiting like madmen, and that will probably be in the top 10 next year. I can say that because Charlie Strong had the worst, you know, winning percentage in the history of Texas and put together two top 10 classes.
Yeah, he still recruited his ass off.
I think it's just up to Tom Herman to light the match, to light the fuse on all that.
I think that Texas could – I think that the Tom Herman energy bus with Shane Buechele as a star quarterback and still –
Well, maybe not. That's why I mentioned that, but go ahead.
Okay, we'll get back to that. But and still a lot of that talent that Charlie Strong did a good job recruiting, I am interested and I am excited to watch Texas this year. And, you know, we're sitting here in early February, so of course you let your mind wander and trick it yourself all over the place. I don't think Texas is going to win a Big 12 championship this year, but I could see, while there might be a transition year in the recruiting cycle, I could see a year one bump under under Tom Herman this fall.
Yeah, I could. I mean, look, they had – it's just been really weird at Texas lately. They haven't had a quarterback since Colt McCoy in 09. They had a Heisman finalist or a guy that ran for 1,500 yards, Deontay Freeman, and lost to Kansas. You know, it's just been a weird, weird run. And I don't know the fact that they were so bad on special teams and really had breakdowns that lost their games. Well, that's why Tom Herman, for better or worse – brought in Casey Horney, who was an assistant at Baylor, as an assistant player personnel guy. And I say better or worse because he got criticized for it for obvious reasons. But I was able to meet Casey Horney, young guy, and is a kind of a savant with special teams. And we all know how those can win and lose you games. They lost a lot of games for Charlie Strong because they weren't buttoned up. So you ask the reason, why would he invite that into the program? Well, to win, you know, to get better. They are going to increase the staff. He already has by six. He's going to have these analysts. He's going to have graphics people. He's going to have more people behind the scenes. And he's already said out loud that President Greg Fenves and AD Mike Perrin haven't said no to me yet. He's going to get everything he wants.
Oh, what a bad quote.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he said it out loud on Wednesday at the press conference, and then to me privately, where he said literally they haven't said no to me yet. And that, look, in every sense, that's Texas. Yeah. You know, they're going to throw money at whatever the problem is in football to get better, while I'm reminded, you know, I think the school itself may be running a deficit, but, you know, there's always the academic and the school butting heads together, but that's another story for another time. But they are going to be in every way, you know, but on the field, top notch. It's going to look a lot like Alabama. Now you just got to play like Alabama.
Mm. That was one of those quotes where, you know, you and I consume so much of the instant news of the moment and the second on Twitter. And that one-liner just, whew. I mean, because it's right. Because and you know, with context and understanding and a moment to breathe and take it in, then yeah, absolutely, it's Texas, and that's what you would always assume from Texas football, is that the Texas football coach gets whatever they want, unless you're Charlie Strong.
Well, the Texas football coach gets whatever they want after the worst 3-year run ever. You know, and I'm talking about stuff like, he goes, we have to renovate the first floor. Well, the first floor is the weight room. They're going to put all kinds of signage up. Mac Brown once told me that, you know, the only thing they've done in the last 10 years is change the carpet. And I would say, I would ask people, well, in the football facility, right, I'm talking. And I would say, why? And the answer that would come back, because they're Texas. You know, they just think, and there's a quote from Herman in the story that said, for too long, we just rolled the brand out there and thought we could do anything we wanted. Well, no, it's a different time. Clemson's got slides. I mean, that's really the term that defines the off season so far. You worried about everything else? Clemson's got slides. The national championship has slides in the new facility. How are you going to match that?
Bowling alley.
Yeah.
All kinds of game rooms. He said, well, I tell you what, they are going to be competing all day.
That's right.
All right. Before we get out of here, National Signing Day in general, a couple things stood out to me, Dennis, wanted to pick your brain about. Number one, USC, very, very strong close. They were in the mix for a lot of blue chips on National Signing Day. They get five-star Joseph Lewis, Greg Johnson, Levi Jones. They are beating out teams like Florida State and Florida and LSU for some of these guys. USC, and this is just a little bit of a sense, so they get a little bit lucky. Some of these guys went to high school in Los Angeles, but USC, little bit hot right now. Your thoughts on whether the Trojans are, you know, in that nice position? Not only, you know, going into the fall, we talked about them for the hype train. You know, we talked about that last week, I believe. But just in terms of, you know, building out the treating Clay Helton like the leader of this, you know, big time program. If this recruiting class is any example, we've got a couple more years of them being in the spotlight.
Yeah, I mean, I think they may have hit a home run again. I mean, Pete Carroll was damaged goods in 2000. Now Clay Helton was a career assistant who everybody respected and got the gig on a second shot. And what did we just say? What did I just say? The only meaningful certainty on signing day is top 10. You finish in the top 10, and as you said, over a period of years, you know, one glove fits into the other. You're going to win. You're going to compete for championships, and that's exactly what USC did on signing day. I saw one of their recruits this week. I went to Austin Westlake, where Texas' new quarterback came from, and talked to Todd Dodge, because I've known him for a long time, the coach, the old Texas quarterback. Levi Jones looks like an absolute stud. He's the son of former NFL player Robert Jones.
Zay Jones' little brother, right?
He is. And Caleb Jones' brother as well, former Texas, former Arizona or Texas receiver, both actually. And so they reached into Texas, obviously. So I don't think there's any other way you can define it, is that it was an absolute home run signing day for USC. I said after the Rose Bowl, they're back. They've got Sam Darnold, should be the number one Heisman candidate going into the season. And they're going to start the season, I have no qualms, in the top five. Oh, yeah. They have before. They've disappointed. But it's better than digging out of a Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian malaise. They look very good right now.
Right? It's just it is a new day in Troy. And it is interesting. And it is, from the sideline, just somebody who likes college football and the way that things cycle in and out, it's always interesting and fun. From the SEC specifically, Alabama cleans up. Anything in particular stand out to you? I would say that, you know, LSU hit on a couple of the players that they wanted to get, including some right there in Texas. Florida did a pretty good job of closing when there was a lot of criticism of this recruiting class of a couple weeks ago. What sort of stood out to you from the Southeastern Conference in terms of signing day takeaways?
I think you summed it up. You know, Alabama, whatever metric you want to believe, six straight at number one.
Seven straight.
And so seven straight. So Alabama and Nick Saban are going to continue to win championships. Coach O with a really good class. I think Auburn did well, and they've got a quarterback, and I think they're the most under the radar team maybe in the SEC this year. They've got Jarrett Stidham at quarterback. They've finally settled things on the coaching staff. They've got an offensive coordinator who's going to call plays for the moment in place of Gus Malzahn. And Florida, you know, I don't know what it is at Florida about the fans that Jim McElwain somehow hasn't done enough. He's won two SEC titles. They were questioning his recruiting. And at the end of the day, they did pretty well. So I would just say shut up for a while. I mean, it could be a lot worse.
They won't.
It could be a lot worse. My alma mater just has a 32-game road losing streak in basketball, and I think finished last in the SEC East, Missouri. But by God, just collected record revenues from the SEC. That's a reason to leave the Big 12.
$40 million, baby.
There you go.
He is Dennis Dodd. You can follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. Dennis, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Glad that you enjoyed your trip to Texas. And be sure, if you're not reading it right now or pulling it up, you go to CBSSports.com for all the latest from Tom Herman and Dennis and National Signing Day with the Longhorns. Dennis, thank you so much.
Chip, thank you.